Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, June 26th. I'm Julian Jackson, KMUD News Youth Intern, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, skeletal human remains discovered in South Fork Eel River, Indigenous youth paddle newly freed Klamath River, hosting community events along the way, and Fort Bragg City Council approves emergency funding for food bank, mill site rezoning, and broadband fees. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The hottest temperatures of the summer so far are expected this weekend, with areas like Garberville, Willow Creek, and Ukiah likely seeing highs over 100 degrees. KMUD News checked in with the local weather service in Eureka for the latest.
Hi, my name is Sahaira Velez. I'm meteorologist at the National Weather Service Eureka. For Friday, we are going to see a rebounding temperature across the interior with warming and more drying conditions for this weekend. We're expecting a temperature warming up with hottest temperature for the interior valleys by Saturday and Sunday, peaking mostly on Sunday with the hottest interior places in the mid-90s to low hundreds. Coastal area, we might see generally slightly above normal with temperatures in the mid-60s. Probably locally up to upper 60s for this weekend. So probably some stratus in the morning and gradually lifting and scattered out during the afternoon hours. At this point, for late June, this is the hottest temperature that we have been seeing for this year so far, yes.
During this heat wave, residents are advised to drink plenty of water, wear light-colored, breathable clothing, take frequent breaks in the shade, use sunscreen with an SPF of 30 or higher to protect against UV rays. For the latest weather, visit weather.gov/EKA. Skeletal human remains were discovered Wednesday afternoon, submerged in the South Fork of the Eel River, just north of Williams Grove along the Avenue of the Giants, approximately 1.2 miles north of Myers Flat. That's according to reporting by our news partner, Redheaded Black Belt, KimKemp.com. Lisa Music reports that residents saw law enforcement vehicles and a coroner's van in the area at around 4 p.m. A student participating in a watershed program reportedly made the discovery while snorkeling in the river. Lieutenant Jesse Taylor of the Humble County Sheriff's Office confirmed the incident, stating, quote, HCSO Coroner's Division responded and located human remains on the river bar. We don't have any identification at this time, and the case is currently under investigation, end quote. No further details have been released at this time. KMUD News will continue to follow this story and provide updates as they become available. On Highway 36, efforts continue to stabilize and clear the large landslide that has fully closed Highway 36 east of Swimmer's Delight near Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. This stretch of roadway will not reopen this weekend as previously anticipated. Caltrans now aims to resume one-way traffic by the holiday weekend, but that timeline may shift depending on the results of further assessments. So far, crews have removed approximately 100 hazardous trees, though many more remain. Much of the remaining work must be completed by helicopter, which is currently scheduled for Monday. Helicopter availability is limited due to fire season, but efforts are underway to accelerate that schedule if possible. In addition to tree removal, helicopter-based LiDAR scanning is still planned to collect high-resolution topographic data. This data will guide the long-term slope repair project expected later this summer. Once hazards in the active slide zone are cleared, crews will shift their focus to constructing a catchment area and a temporary traffic lane, slightly relocated away from unstable hillside. Caltrans says it remains committed to restoring safe, reliable travel on Route 36 and appreciates the public's continued patience. For the latest updates, follow Caltrans District 1 on social media. For the first time in over 100 years, the Klamath River flows freely from its headwaters, and a group of Indigenous youth are currently making their first descent. KMUD News catches up with Amada Lang, founder of Pa'ama Paddle Club, as she leads Native youth on this historic journey, along with a series of community events happening along the way. Jordan Pangelinan reports.
The Paddle Tribal Waters Club is inviting families and the community to the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council in Orleans, California. The PTW will bring their learnings from the cultural practitioners and the resources that sustain the Karuk people along the Klamath River. River Runners, part of the Rivers to Rios organization, bring students, educators, and natives from Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, Peru, and the United States together to facilitate place-based education experiences that empower the next generation of river stewards. KMUD News spoke with Amada Lang, a Karuk native who works with Rios to River, which helped create the Pa'ama Paddle Club for the Karuk native youth.
I was really inspired by the work that we're doing within Rios to Rivers, and I noticed that we created different paddle clubs that are around the world, like our Amazonian River Initiative is in Bolivia. There's the Kayaki Moon program in Chile, and then we have our Paddle Tribal Waters program here in the Klamath Basin. And so I've just kind of got the idea of creating a long-lasting paddle club after this initial idea of the first descent. I thought that there could be a long-lasting club in our community, and our kids are really taking to the sport, and it's a new way to almost be a recreation professional, but also uplifting your cultural identity and yourself as a professional and your culture through it. And so it's really given an awesome voice for our youth.
The Paddle Club has given inspiration to other Native youth and other river runners to create space for educational and cultural practices in their area.
I really thought about how much our community could really benefit from that. And so it's kind of grown into a actual paddle club and movement, which has been really good. We have some other kiddos that are part of our Paddle Tribal Waters team who also created a kayak club up in the Warm Springs territory as well for their native youth of their area. And they're seniors this year, and so they're actually deciding to go to a college that's going to allow them to kayak at the same time and continue creating their paddle club. And so it's kind of been a little bit of a trickle effect after the Paddle Tribal Waters program and seeing the initiative with the dam removal. I think that has spurred a lot of hope in our community. And I definitely think the paddle clubs will keep on pushing for more movements in the sense of dam removal and protesting dams, along with just having healthy, clean flowing rivers. I think it's provided a lot of educational opportunities as well for myself. And so with this paddle club, I've really been trying to take in as much as I can, along with just networking and working with the community. And I'm realizing there's a lot of people in the water world in many different aspects. And so it's been really awesome and helped me in my professional career growing as well.
The First Nation Development Institute awarded the Paddle Tribal Water Club $60,000. This grant is a way to support the Pa'ama in their first descent. It will provide more opportunities for those in the Karuk territory.
We focus this grant to really uplift our kiddos during events as we're going through the Klamath Basin in Karuk territory. So there'll be an event in Happy Camp where we'll have the kids that are getting dropped off that day. We'll come in, get to have some pizza, Happy Camp pizza, and then get to paddle down and have a community float that day. We're also going to have another community float in the Orleans Soames Bar area. And I'm getting to plan that with some of my family and having them do some introductions for us as we're going down the river near our family's area. And so it's just been really, really impactful that these grants can really support us in our home territory and really support us in the work that we want to see happen in our community. And so this grant is really amplifying that for our youth.
Lang tells KMUD more on what to expect as they make it down the river at these community events.
We're also going to be able to be sharing about our films through the process. So I'll be able to actually go into the local schools here on the North Coast and kind of going up the Del Norte area and trickling into our native territory up the basin here, but and kind of share about what Paddle Tribal Waters is and our descent this com that's coming up. And so this grant's really allowing us to get more outspread about our movement, include more youth in our movement in the community, and providing our youth with more availability to really have this first descent be a community-based event for them.
Klamath Dam's coming down has inspired and continued to inspire activists, youth, and water protectors to keep fighting the fight to protect their land. Lang expresses the Klamath Dam's coming down is instrumental to others around the world to continue their fight as stewards and activists.
And there are still some fights that we'll definitely have to do. And I definitely think, too, all rivers lead to the ocean. And that's what I've been realizing in my knowledge with this, that we got one. This fight is huge and a really, really, really awesome, I guess you can say, like, movement for others to see. Example is going into Chile and meeting the Mapuche Puenche community. And they're getting to see that our dams are coming down when they're almost 20 years behind in the way that their government and everything runs. And so they don't have control over their rivers. Some of they were given away. And so just seeing the stewardship and allyship that's happening through the Klamath Dams coming down is huge. And it's very, very instrumental and inspiring for others to continue their fight around the world. But I do think we still have a lot more with the way that we have to continue this fight as activists and stewards and water protectors and just fighting the fight that our ancestors kind of sparked and continued through us. And so that's been my focus, what I've been realizing, because a lot of people keep saying free flowing, and I think the excitement's there, but I also just like to highlight that there's still those two up top, and they still control a lot of what's happening up there with the Upper Klamath Basin tribes.
The club has also brought other Native youth together to uplift cultural conversations and be excited to learn.
This is some of their formative years that they're really getting to have these inner exchanges with other tribal students and kiddos around the region. Because again, we do the Klamath Basin and support Klamath Basin students in our programming, but we do have some kiddos that applied from the Deschutes River and Warm Springs territory. And so there's been cultural exchanges where you can see those friendships are gonna last a lifetime. You can see that. And so, and again, their creation of their own kayak clubs and their movements to go to college. And some of the students, too, were saying that, like, they Happy Camp shuts down for 2 weeks. And so I can go on a ramble all that, but with the school systems and the school education and the way that our students aren't necessarily having their education supported in our reservation areas and native communities sometimes, too, at least locally, this has given them a forefront to be excited about their education, have teachers talk to them specifically and be there for them directly and one-on-one support. And we even, a few of our native staff last year created an indigenized curriculum and actually had it pass through World Class Kayak Academy to be accredited and to teach. And so I was able to be a social studies and environmental science teacher last year and actually teach about our home communities and our different types of epistemologies and traditional ecological knowledge-based systems. And you can see that the kids were excited to learn about them, their home communities and history about where they're from. And that, for me, made me realize that there are spaces in our communities that can still be filled with opportunity. A lot of the times, it just gets sucked out with, like, not enough teachers, not enough this. And it's like, well, if we actually had these resources for our kids, they would do great. And so that's really what I realized through this programming and some of these kids too.
Details on community events and the upcoming community event in Orleans, California. Visit the Pa Ama Instagram for more information at PAAH_AAMA. For KMUD News, this is Jordan Pangelinan.
Turning to Mendocino, Fort Bragg City Council approves emergency funding for food bank, mill site rezoning, and broadband fees. KZYX Elise Cox reports.
The Fort Bragg City Council on Monday unanimously agreed to allocate $58,000 in emergency funding to the Fort Bragg Food Bank after hearing testimony about the ripple effects federal cuts to food programs are having on the community. The funds will come from a 24-25 budget surplus that was created by open positions that were not filled. The council also discussed allocating funds to the Humane Society, the Mendocino Coast Clinics, and the Senior Center. In other action, the city council agreed to rezone the mill site. The council adopted a new fee schedule for the new municipal fiber optic broadband utility. They adopted a city budget, and they approved the next step in deploying an innovative wave-powered desalinization buoy. Council member Lindy Peters noted that the zoning changes needed to allow for a science center and greater housing density on the mill site have been in the works for a decade.
It was, I believe, in 2014, Marie, you could step in and help out. When we first had the idea to donate property from the city to the Noyo Center, with the caveat that if they didn't do something with it in 10 years, it could come back to the city, and by do something, meaning form a 501c, start raising funds on their own, create some sort of center so that they could have an identity. Anyway, all this took place, and now here we are. We finally rezoned it to its proper zoning through an amendment that had to be okayed by the Coastal Commission. 10 years going on 11 it takes to really, you know, do something like this. And it's, that's just to break ground so people understand how long the planning process takes.
Planner Marie Jones summarized the changes.
Obviously, this came before you guys last summer, and the Planning Commission and both of you sent it on to the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission sent it back to us in April, and they did certify everything except they wanted to add a new definition for what is a science center. So it's really the only change here. And with this action, you will be rezoning 120 acres of the mill site, finally and permanently, to Coastal Trail, Sherwood Valley Band of Pomo's medium density residential zoning district, and the Noyo Center.
The Fort Bragg City Council unanimously approved a new fee schedule for the municipal fiber optic broadband utility and confirmed the continuation of existing MCN or Mendocino Community Network fees. The city officially acquired MCN as part of its municipal broadband initiative and intends to operate it as a utility starting July 1. The fees will range from $40 to $110 a month. Together with existing legacy contracts, the utility is expected to generate $2.3 million in revenue. This will cover all expenses, including ongoing operations and maintenance of the network, customer service, annual debt service payments, and more. The public had questions neither the council or staff could answer, including where the new utility building would be. Councilmember Peters said the city is making a leap of faith.
I think it's, you know, going to take us into the future, something that this town has needed for a while, especially our youth. One of the biggest complaints you get when they come back into town is, geez, when are you going to do something about the internet? You know, how come my cell phone drops out a lot of places around here? You know, technology is important for the future. And I know it's great to come here and turn off your cell phone. I like to do that too and read a book. But at the same time, for commerce, for business, and you know, for quality of life, this is something we need to move forward on.
The city also established a broadband and digital infrastructure division, which will include a director of broadband and digital infrastructure, a broadband manager, a senior network administrator, a network operator, a systems technician, a broadband finance technician, and a systems technician who will be part-time. For the upcoming fiscal year starting in July, the Fort Bragg City Council has agreed to budget $57.7 million for expenses or appropriations. Of that, approximately $14.3 million will come from the general fund, leaving a roughly $52,000 surplus. The budget includes a robust $34 million capital improvement program. City Manager Isaac Whippy noted that the city is maintaining an operating and litigation reserve of 20% and an emergency reserve of 10%.
As you take a look at neighboring jurisdictions and kind of the budget shortfall and federal cuts. City of Fort Bragg, we're doing well. We have a healthy budget, reserves. We're able to fund services, current general government services, and other community priorities. And that is a testament to your leadership.
Finally, there is an update on the Onika Desalinization Buoy Project. Last month, the Fort Bragg City Planning Commission accepted an initial study of the environmental impact of the buoy and the subsequent mitigated negative declaration as required by CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. To complete CEQA requirements, the contractor, Miller Marine Science and Consulting, is requesting an extra $3,500. On Monday, the council approved the change and authorized a total contract of $53,000 with Miller Marine Science and Consulting. I'm Elise Cox.
In national news, Democratic lawmakers call for new War Powers Act in wake of U.S. attacks on Iran. Christina Onestad reports.
We cannot have another war in the Middle East. The American people are sick of spending billions of dollars on these endless wars. And they want the focus to be on our country, jobs here, child care, health care.
Democrat Ro Khanna of California's Silicon Valley is sponsoring the resolution in the House. It would require congressional approval of further strikes on Iran. Khanna was among the progressive Democrats to blast President Donald Trump's bombing of Iran without congressional approval.
We don't know what the strikes accomplished, but we do know a lot of the harm. Obviously, the public reports are the intelligence thinks that this just set back the nuclear ambitions by a few months. We need to understand what actually was even destroyed. You have a strike that is actually leading to more popular support now for the Iranian regime, that is leading Iran to declare victory, that is leading Iran to say they're now not considering being in the NPT, that they're considering kicking out the IAEA inspectors. It's cost our country billions of dollars. It's put our troops at risk. It has put us made us more entrenched in the Middle East.
Republican Thomas Massey of Kentucky is sponsoring the resolution in the Senate, though most Republicans have lined up in support of President Donald Trump's bombing of Iran. Washington State Representative Pramila Jayapal pointed out the hypocrisy.
Donald Trump said he was going to be the president of peace. He said he was going to get us out of wars on day one. And instead, Americans are being dragged into another endless war now between Israel and Iran. It is not our war. And we have other ways to deal with nuclear weapons. That is what we should be pursuing. That is why it is so important that we vote on this War Powers Resolution.
While criticism has mounted from many Democrats, House Speaker Emeritus Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco, speaking to reporters this week, said Trump should have sought approval from Congress first and suggested he would have garnered the support needed to carry out the strikes.
Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. They cannot have a nuclear weapon. And B, our friendship with Israel is a true, real one based on values and the rest and our own national security. So those two pieces of it, I think we're all in agreement. Of course, we respect the right of Congress to vote. And I think if the president had brought it to Congress, he probably would have won.
Meanwhile, in the House, 128 Democrats joined all Republicans in tabling an article of impeachment against President Donald Trump Tuesday. Texas Democrat Al Green introduced the measure on the House floor.
No one person should have the power to take over 300 million people to war without consulting with the Congress of the United States of America. I believe that if we do not take immediate action, this authoritarian president will not only devolve the country into authoritarianism, I believe he is a would-be dictator who would become a dictator.
As the Republican Party, which controls Congress and the White House, is largely supporting President Donald Trump's bombing of Iran, it's unlikely either measures will pass should the bills even get a vote. Khanna says his War Powers Resolution should reach the House floor for a vote by mid-July. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump appears unfazed by the opposition, posting this music video celebrating his bombing of Iran Tuesday night on social media. Iran says U.S. and Israeli strikes on the country have killed more than 600 people, the vast majority civilians. The Washington-based human rights activist group today said the death toll stands at more than 1,000, more than 4,400 wounded. Iranian counterstrikes on Israel killed 28. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
Trump says attacks obliterated Iran nuke program. Dems say Pentagon intelligence shows otherwise. Christopher Martinez reports.
It's been a bizarre last few days with President Donald Trump's two-week ultimatum for Iran, followed days later by a surprise attack on Iranian nuclear facilities, then followed by Trump's announcement of a ceasefire agreement between Israel and Iran. Although perhaps not so surprising if you recall that last year Trump vowed to keep the U.S. out of new wars and also vowed to blow Iran to smithereens if it attacked the United States. So when Iran and Israel exchanged missile attacks just as the ceasefire was to go into effect, Trump was not happy. He spoke to reporters Tuesday morning as he was heading to a NATO meeting in the Netherlands.
We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
Still, the ceasefire appears to be holding, at least for now. As for Trump's weekend attack on Iranian nuclear facilities, Trump had boasted that they were completely obliterated, and he blasted the news media that questioned that claim.
I think CNN ought to apologize to the pilots of the B-2s. I think that MSDNC ought to apologize. I think these guys really, these networks and these cable networks, are real losers. You really are. You're real losers. You're gutless losers.
The issue may be a little bit of a sore point for Trump. It was just last week that he complained about not getting recognition for his supposed accomplishments. He posted a message on his Truth Media platform saying, "I won't get a Nobel Peace Prize no matter what I do, including Russia, Ukraine, and Israel, Iran, whatever those outcomes may be." He goes on to say, "But the people know, and that's all that matters to me." The last president to be awarded a Nobel Peace Prize was Barack Obama. In any event, a new U.S. intelligence report finds that Iran's nuclear program has been set back only a few months after U.S. strikes, not totally destroyed, as President Trump has said. Many Democrats blasted Trump's attacks as unjustified and illegal. Republicans largely supported Trump's attacks, although not all of them did. Georgia Congressmember Marjorie Taylor Greene criticized the attacks on social media Saturday, saying American troops have been killed and forever torn apart physically and mentally for regime change, foreign wars, and for military-industrial base profits. I'm sick of it. Other Republicans, including Vice President J.D. Vance, had said the attacks were not about regime change. As Trump was on his way to the NATO meeting, a reporter asked Trump whether he wanted regime change in Iran.
No, I don't want it. I'd like to see everything calm down as quickly as possible. Regime change takes chaos, and ideally we don't want to see so much chaos, so we'll see how it does. You know, the Iranians are very good traders, very good business people, and they got a lot of oil. They should be fine. They should be able to rebuild and do a good job. They're never going to have nuclear, but other than that, they should do a great job.
Over at the United Nations, the UN Security Council met to discuss nuclear nonproliferation in light of the Israel-Iran conflict. UN Undersecretary Rosemary DiCarlo called the ceasefire agreement an opportunity to avoid catastrophic escalation and achieve a peaceful resolution of the Iran nuclear issue. The U.S. delegate described the strikes on Iran as in accordance with the inherent right to self-defense. Iran's delegate said, once the aggressors stop the attacks, Iran will stop its lawful military response as well. But he added that justifications for attacks on Iran are baseless and have no legal basis.
In reality, Israel, the region's only undeclared nuclear armed entity and non-party to NPT, refused IAEA inspections and monitoring while Iran complies with the NPT and has subjected its nuclear program to the most rigorous IAEA monitoring.
Israeli Ambassador Danny Danon fired back that if there were a Nobel Prize for deception, Iran would win. He boasted of the attacks on Iran.
Our forces achieved the objective of our operation in removing these threats. In full coordination with President Trump, Israel has agreed to the President's proposal for a ceasefire. We thank the United States for its support and critical role in removing the Iranian nuclear threat.
As for now, questions abound, like, will Iran and Israel abide by the ceasefire? Will Iran halt its nuclear programs? And, as always, what will Trump do next? Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Lisa Music. And thank you to our reporters, Jordan Pangelinan, Elise Cox, Christina Onnested, Christopher Martinez, and our executive producer, Lauren Schmidt. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I am KMUD News intern Julian Jackson.